Hello, Freedom Nation. It's Jeff here once again with the Freedom Nation podcast. And on today's show, I've got Justin Dixon of Hire Tomorrow, which is a very innovative company. Justin worked in the corporate world like a lot of us and made the transition several years back and launched a company that is very innovative from the perspective of hiring, leveraging AI, which, you know, AI is the big thing today. So I'm going to love to hear his story. And in addition to that, really hear his story on how he made that jump from corporate into his own space. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on in just one second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Justin, how are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. And folks, we just found out that we're like 15 minutes apart, which I don't get to interview a lot of folks this close to me, a few in Austin, but very few in Cedar Park where I live. So it's fun. And we're going to actually get a chance to sit down and have a cup of coffee soon.
Yeah, very rarely do you get to meet in real life, as they say. So I'm excited to do that.
I know. And after years of doing podcasts, I mean, it's rare that I have somebody anywhere close to me. Most of them are around the world. It's funny. Today, I seem like I have more guests all over the world than I have here local.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the beauty of it. Well, let's get started. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, it's a long story, I guess, but I'll sum it up here. But, you know, I kind of grew up. Yeah. So I grew up in a real small town in a very rural part of Pennsylvania, really with kind of not really being any really true entrepreneurs that I was really aware of. Yeah. So I, you know, my kind of upbringing and my kind of financial education was get a good job, work your butt off, invest in your 401k and hope you've got enough money when you retire. And retirement was 65, 70, whatever that number was. Uh-huh. And so that's what I was taught. And that's what I was on the path to do. And then probably like 2017, 2018, I think it was, I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it really kind of lit or flipped a switch in my brain to think about how I'm investing not only my money, but investing my time, my resources, and not necessarily just punching the clock every day and essentially helping somebody else build their business or grow their business. So I'm a very risk averse person. So it took me a while to build up the financial foundation to feel comfortable to kind of jump away from the corporate world. And I kind of fell into recruiting in 06 right out of college. Okay. So I worked for a big staffing firm outside of Philadelphia. And then I went in-house into a corporate environment. I was the first recruiter for an e-commerce startup in Philadelphia. I worked at Comcast for 5 years as a manager of recruiting. And then my last corporate gig, I was head of recruiting for a wealth management firm in Philadelphia. So I've kind of been involved in talent acquisition my entire career over 18 years. And so the natural progression would be to start your own recruiting business,
sure.
Right? Which is eventually what I did. And, you know, I was married at the time. I read that book. It flipped my light bulb on. And then I was a little nervous because I was like, well, I'm married. My wife and I have a very similar kind of financial focus around like getting a good job and investing in your 401k. But now I'm thinking differently, right? I'm thinking about investing in real estate. I'm thinking about starting a business, right? And so I had I was cautiously optimistic that I gave her the book and I said, hey, can you just read this and then let's talk? And, you know, she got done reading it in like 2 days and was like, what are we doing? You know, why are we not like buying businesses? Why are we not investing in businesses? And so luckily, you know, her and I had a very similar reaction to that book. And then we were kind of off to the races. We invested in a duplex in Pittsburgh, generate some passive income. We downgraded our lives in 2019. We kind of rented out. We moved out from our condo in Philly. We rented it, moved to a small apartment in the suburbs, really with the intent to, like I said, build that financial foundation, shrink our expenses to the point where all of those day-to-day expenses would be covered by my wife's salary.
Nice.
Because in 2020, I was going to jump out and start a recruiting business.
Okay.
And I did that. January of 2020, I went into my boss's office. I said, hey, I really appreciate the opportunity to work here, but I want to start my own thing. I've been thinking about it for a while, and today is the day. Little did I know that a few months later in 2020, the world was going to shut down with the COVID pandemic, and which completely ruined all of my plans of global domination from recruiting perspective very quickly. So so we can talk a lot about the kind of path. That's kind of how I got to kind of that day of kind of taking the leap, betting on myself. And there's a lot that went into that decision because I'm not a burn all the boats, just I'll figure it out type of person. I definitely need to have some stability and some like ideas of how I'm going to be successful before I pull the ripcord.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, I think it's interesting. Well, probably one of the best things I hear out of what you're saying is, you know what, you already had planned ahead for, hey, we've got to shrink our expenses. We know we're not going to make a lot at the beginning. And boom, you couldn't have put yourself in what I would consider a better position at that point because you're not carrying a big, massive mortgage. You're not carrying, you know, you're at least getting some passive income coming in and all that. So, so, you know, going into the pandemic, I mean, probably the worst time to be a recruiter. I can't think of anything worse than that besides running a co-working space in the middle of a pandemic. but actually, it kind of worked out well for us because all these people then got pushed back to their houses and many of them couldn't work at home. So they came to us in a lot of cases because we did stay open. You know, we were able to flaunt the law a little bit by, you know, being a mail facility for all of our clients. So we had to stay open. We were required to stay open at that point. So, you know, it worked out really well for us. I mean, it did kill one of our offices, but, you know, other than that, we were fine. So, you know, what did you do to kind of adjust? Cause you continually been self-employed afterwards.
Yeah, I would say it was, you know, obviously, like for everybody in the world, it's a big kick in the pants to wake up and, you know, realize that you may have completely destroyed or very severely dented you and your families, you know, as my wife and I at the time. And so it's like, you know, could have severely damaged our financial future, right? Because, but the beauty and the curse of recruiting businesses are they're very low cost to start.
Yeah.
So really all you need is a laptop and an LLC and you're good to go.
Yeah. You don't even necessarily need a website at that point. So
no. If you've got a network, you can figure it out. So that was kind of the blessing, whereas I wasn't burning a lot of cash. I didn't have a brick and mortar store. I didn't have employees, so I didn't have any kind of overhead. And so I luckily had a few clients that were paying the bills, so to speak. I definitely wasn't, you know, lighting the house on fire or doing anything crazy, really exciting. But that got me kind of through that year. I made less than half of what I did as a W-2 the year before. So not a great start.
That's not normal. That's not out of the ordinary. So
yeah, but at least I made some money that year. And then, you know, but really it was I found a community of people that were doing the same thing I was. So I found like five other solo recruiters that had started their own businesses a few years earlier than I did. And in normal circumstances, we would be considered competitors, right? Because we're going after similar clients, similar candidates. But we really kind of came together and were like, let's think about this as a high tide rises all ships. And we set up like a weekly Zoom call and we just kind of, we commiserated about what was happening in the world, as you did during that, you know, 8-10 month period. But then when one of us got busy, one of us got a couple of positions, we would share them with the rest and be like, hey, we'll do some rev share. We'll split fees because, you know, we need to fill these positions to get paid. And I'd rather get 50% of a fee than 0%.
Nothing. Yeah,
that's right. So it was kind of an interesting world for us for, you know, call it a year. We kind of stuck together on those. And then once kind of 2021 rolled around, the world of remote work really flourished. I mean, 2021, everybody was hiring remote. That's when you saw wages go way up. So, you know, it was hard to compete for talent, which caused a lot of companies to work with recruiters. So once we got kind of past the 2020 calendar year, we were off to the races and it was a lot of fun, but COVID was not fun for anybody, obviously, but from a a new entrepreneur, a lot of people I talked to were more or less saying, if you can get through this, if you can survive this, you're going to be much better off than you would be if you would have started it in 2021.
Yeah.
Right. If I would have started in 2021, it would have been, you know, everything would have been up and to the right and it would have been amazing, which would have been cool. But I wouldn't have had the ability to go through very, very hard times. And you know, luckily I had a very supportive wife. We went into it with, you know, hand in hand. It wasn't like I was saying, I want to do something. It was like, we're both in this. Right. And so it was not easy, but, it could have been worse.
Well, and I think you did probably the best thing that you could have absolutely done for yourself was to build that network of people that were kind of going through the same thing as you, because, you know, that was a time as a business people, you know, you didn't have networking groups you could go out to. Everything was kind of virtual networking, which really didn't work. And, you know, you have to, especially when you're going through difficult times as a business owner, you've got to have other people that are going through that with you, you know. Yep. And it was great where it was like, hey, if I get a contract, then you guys can help me. And, if you get a contract, I'll help you. And you got yourself through it. And, you know, it's the adverse times that teach you how to be a good business owner.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing that kind of came out of it, one, I built some friendships that I didn't have before.
Yep.
And, you know, I was on an island, so to speak, because my wife still had her job. She still had her meetings and all the things that she went through, and still had the same kind of group of friends, coworkers that she could talk to.
Yep.
And when you're an entrepreneur, whether you're just starting or if you're, you know, a few years into it, it can be a lonely road.
It's always
even made more lonely when, you know, you can't even, you know, go meet your best friend for a beer. You've got to do a virtual happy hour or something. Mm. Right. So it was a weird time. Like I said, it wasn't easy, but, you know, we made it through, and, you know, now we're off into the races, and we've been around for over 5 years, and, you know, it's been great.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, your company now and what it is that you kind of bring to the table that maybe other recruiters don't.
Yeah, I would say it's hard to differentiate recruiting firms other than the people that are doing the work. And so that's one of my biggest differentiators. I've purposely kept my company to just me. I've got an assistant that I work with that helps me with a lot of my kind of operational support. But to my clients, I typically work a lot with private equity groups and other startups. So a lot of times I'll get brought in by a private equity firm just after they make an acquisition, and they say, hey, Justin, we need to bring in a CFO and a head of sales and a head of marketing. And then I typically will stay with them, with that company as they're scaling. Because typically when you get investment from a private equity group, a lot of that money is going to go to hiring people.
Yeah.
So my kind of proposal to them is I can be your one throat to choke when it comes to recruiting. Mm-hmm. Anything that you need, from a CEO to an accountant or a salesperson, I can support, because I've hired all of those people throughout my career. Mm-hmm. And so they like that they can work with one firm. They don't have to have special firms for each different skill set within the company, because these are typically small businesses that don't have the time to manage multiple vendors and all this stuff. They like to say, hey, Justin, you go do it. We trust that you're going to be able to figure it out. And it's been quite successful. So I started my company for a lot of reasons, but one of the main one is because big companies don't have a necessarily hard time attracting talent because they have a brand, they've got big recruiting teams, they've got big budgets. Startups and small businesses don't.
Yeah.
They have to do what I call the post and pray method. They post a job on LinkedIn or Indeed and they pray somebody great applies, and they have to kind of hire what they get. Mm-hmm. And my proposal to small businesses is like, yes, we're working with me as an investment. It's not free. However, I would like to think that I can bring them talent that is either faster than what they can find on their own or better than what they can find on their own or both. And that will help exponentially grow their business. And more often than not, that tends to be the case. So that's kind of how I operate. I'm very much a generalist when it comes to recruiting. Like I said, I tell people I've hired everything from a CEO to a forklift driver and everything in between across a myriad of industries. So I've seen a lot, and you tell me what you need, and I go find it.
Now, if you can find a forklift driving CEO, that's the one.
So that's the purple unicorn that we're all trying to find.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about how you do it. Now, do you hire contractors under you? Bring in contractors
occasionally. If I have a bigger project, I'll bring in some subs that I know. Yeah. Some of the people that I mentioned earlier that were where we split fees, I'll bring some of that. Sometimes they'll come in when I have a bigger lift than what I can handle. Because when it comes to recruiting, it's all about delivery and the customer experience, right? Sure. Because you know, everybody that's probably listening to this, if they're an entrepreneur or even if they're not, they probably had some interaction with a recruiter or a recruiting firm that probably wasn't positive.
Yeah.
And so the whole goal is to be as white glove as we possibly can, support our clients as much as we possibly can. So I don't take on too much business that would dilute my ability to do just that. Now, with the advent and the kind of broad exposure to AI, that's making some of the things that I do that were very manual or time sensitive and time consuming, I can outsource them, so to speak, to AI.
Sure.
Or some of the tools that I use in order to make my life a little bit easier. I will say that there are a million and one AI tools out there in the recruiting world. Most of them that I've looked at are not built by recruiters, which means that the way that they think the process works is not exactly how recruiters kind of do their workflow. So some of them are good. Some of them are not. I'm not going to out any of the ones that I don't think are good. But I think we're in the early innings of AI when it comes to AI in general, but also AI in recruitment. And so I'm testing a lot of things, but I'm a risk averse person, as I mentioned. So some things that I think other people are implementing from an AI perspective, I'm seeing how they plan out before I go fully into that
world. Well, and I mean, that's the thing today. I mean, it's just you're seeing these AI startups pop up everywhere, and a lot of it isn't really baked at this point.
No.
You know, and I think for the average person, they don't really understand how it should be working. So it seems magical to them, but I think there's so many that they're duplicitous, and they just kind of overlap with a lot of other stuff. And I think you're wise to be a little bit risk averse with that. I mean, it's the same thing in the finance industry. We're seeing the beginnings of some of that, but you know, it's still early innings by all means.
Well, and a lot of the startups that I talk to, they're asking me about what they should implement from a recruiting perspective for AI.
Yeah.
And I tell them, like, you know, I can give you some ideas, but you're going to have to really put a lot of time and energy into it to train that AI to do exactly what you want to do, exactly how you want to do it. It's not just I buy a software, I plug it in, and it works. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got to train it. There are certain things it'll do out of the box, so to speak. But that's what I think a lot of people, they see the end result. Just like the 10-year overnight success, right? They see somebody that is uber successful, and they think they did it overnight when it took 10 years of slog to get to that point.
Just to get to that point, you know.
That's right. Yeah. So I believe that I use AI a lot for me as an entrepreneur. I use it more as a thought partner, so I talk to it. I've built like an AI board that, you know, I've got different personas on the board where I kind of say, hey, here's a client that I'm working with, or here's an industry I'm trying to go after. How would you approach them? And so it's very interesting to as a solopreneur, not having other executives to talk to quote unquote, talk to an AI board that brings me different opinions and thoughts, and also strategies that I would not maybe have thought of on my own. Definitely not as fast.
So yeah, it was interesting because I was trying to develop an offer for one of the businesses that I have. And I was trying to mimic some of the stuff that Alex Hormozi talks about in his $100 million offers, $100 million leads. And it was interesting because I kind of presented a suggestion of what I thought I really wanted to do from an offer standpoint. This, you know, and the cool part about it was it actually came back and it was like, yeah, that's good, but here's some things you might want to think about that could come bite you, you know, years down, or could bite you in the end by offering this. And, you know, then it's like, okay, I still am willing to offer this because I know what I do will work for most businesses the way I set the parameters. But it was nice to know, okay, yeah, here's what could happen. And I need to, you know, I need to have an out if it goes too far down the road on that side. So, you know, I agree. I use AI like that on a daily basis. I mean, literally probably 6 of the 8 hours of my day that I work most often, I'm on AI kind of going back and forth with things like that. So totally agree.
Yeah, it's a powerful tool if you don't just use it to write a better email or a better, you know, sales campaign, which is what most people are using it for. You know, I'm sure you are getting inundated just like I am with all the AI slop that you're just, you can just tell that it's AI.
Yeah.
And that's the other part that's hard when, from a recruiting perspective is, and with these small businesses, they, if they post a job, they used to get maybe 50 to 100 applicants.
Yeah.
Now they're getting hundreds, if not 1,000, because if you're a candidate, you can hire an AI bot to apply the jobs for you.
Sure.
And while as a candidate, that sounds great, the bot is changing your resume to reflect the job description, which can be good or bad. Mm-hmm. But also it's creating fake applications. It's just, there's a lot of confusion. And so clients that think getting 1,000 applicants is a good thing, well, now you have to go sift through all that. Yeah. Crap
the problem.
To find the ones that are actually real. And that's where I've actually created a different offering or a side offering that I'm kind of having clients that don't have an HR recruiting department outsource all of that to me. And my tools can kind of take those 1,000 applicants and kind of distill it down into, call it a top 25 that I will then review as a human and say, okay, here are the top 10 or 5 that I think are worth talking to. And then, so they save a lot of time.
I've got it's interesting. I've got a recruiter here in my office that works for a large, it's a derivative of Sony, one of their companies. And he was talking a little bit, and I don't know if you've experienced this in your world. Now they're getting these like almost like AI interviewees.
Yep.
Are you seeing that? Is that prevalent or is it kind of a weird, more of a whatever?
Yeah. So I've not had any direct experience, at least not that I'm aware of somebody that I interview like this virtually that is not a person.
Yeah.
But I have had people that you can tell that I'm asking questions that they have their phone listening and an AI chat open that essentially the AI is hearing my question, typing a response,
formulating a reply.
And then the candidate is almost regurgitating that response.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so that's a problem because if you get hired based on your interview and your interview was all AI generated, well, if you said you can swing a hammer, but you get to a job and you can't swing a hammer, well, it's pretty clear that you wasted your time, their time, maybe you made a few bucks, but it's interesting. So, So I think there's some things around AI interviewing. I actually posted something on LinkedIn the other day about AI interviews and how I'm not sold on them for a myriad of reasons, but there's some compliance and risk that I think you open yourself up to if you have AI literally transcribe the interview.
Okay.
Because while you can control the AI from what it asks, you cannot control how a human or what a human will respond with.
Yeah.
And if they respond with something that could be deemed discriminating and they don't get the job, well, now you've just captured that information into a system of record and now you open yourself up to risk. Mm-hmm.
Not that we asked the question, but they volunteered the answer.
I don't know how many times I feel like a therapist sometimes where people will divulge things to me that they probably wouldn't even tell their best friend. And I'm like, you know that I'm like the gatekeeper to this job opportunity, right? You may just because I don't work for that company, they have hired me to find the best people. Yeah. And you're sharing some things that I don't think I would even share with my best friend.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. So that's where the AI interview stuff, I'm going to let some other people sort out first.
Yeah.
I think there could be merit, especially if you're doing a lot of high volume call center hiring, all that stuff.
Yeah, just that quick, you know, okay, just a simple, just ask a few questions. Okay, answer it. All right.
Yep.
Now you'll move on to an actual human at this point.
That's right.
Slog through a lot more. Yeah. I can see
that. So I think there's application, but I think there's some risks that you open yourself to when you're transcribing anything, frankly. So,
yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. Yep. But yeah, there's a lot of, I think we're scratching the surface. There's a long way to go from AI for a lot of reasons, but specifically from my world in recruiting, There's definitely some applications that you can utilize now that are good, saves time, and goes from there. So,
well, cool. What's new in your world that you want to tell us a little bit about?
I would say there's, well, I guess the kind of a new thing is just kind of being able to offer this new kind of outsource recruiting to my clients. Because most of what I do is a client hires me to fill a very specific position, and I get paid a fee for that, right? Mm-hmm. And so the new thing, because of this AI boom that we've seen, is clients, like I said, are getting inundated with candidates. And so now I'm offering this like, hey, just outsource your applicant flow to me. Mm-hmm. Let my systems and my team, because I've got a virtual assistant that I've trained on how to at least sift through candidates. We do questionnaires and all that stuff to kind of get the, we kind of boil the ocean, get it down to a manageable amount, but then I still do the kind of sifting through by a human, somebody that's got, you know, decades of experience in recruiting, which I've seen a lot of actually I've just literally launched it like a month or two ago, and I've already had tremendous success just from the get-go. So that's kind of the newest thing. You know, I'm going to go to London in a couple of months. Nice. So that'll be fun. So yeah, there's a lot going on. It's still hot here in Austin, in Cedar Park, but
I'm looking very forward to next summer. We have plans to spend a month in Massachusetts. Although looking at it now, they're hotter than we are up there, which is hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's this whole heat dome over the eastern part of the country. So they actually, I think they're actually warmer than we are at this point.
And they're probably more humid, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Infinitely more humid. And their air conditioning systems are not really designed for that kind of heat. So I'm sure they're miserable up there. But
I've heard a lot of people go to Michigan and Colorado.
My next door neighbors. My next door neighbors came from Michigan originally. And so they've got up on one of the lakes up in Michigan. They've got, or Minnesota, one of the two. They've got, you know, like a cabin or something like that they go to every summer for a month or two. And
sounds
I'm
brilliant.
I'm good for that. Yeah. Everything except for one thing, which is the building I'm sitting in right now is basically virtual. So.
I mean, that's the beauty of life now. We got a chance to meet via podcast and now we're going to meet in real life. And, you know, you can do business with people all over the world that you would never have been able to interact
with. That was the difference during pandemic. I mean, you know, I think prior to that, we might have had with my old firm, we probably had 10 ever Zoom conversations with people. After that, I mean, you know, pandemic and beyond, I mean, 99% of our meetings are over Zoom. Mine are today. So I could literally have a client anywhere in the United States from the wealth management perspective and it wouldn't matter. So that's the beauty.
One thing I think is going to be interesting, and I've seen some people kind of chatter about this, is that because AI is becoming very good at mimicking and kind of creating an avatar and essentially creating content that is completely AI generated, that there's going to become this trust issue of you not knowing if I'm AI or not, and vice versa. And that there could be this potential shift back to in-person sales, in-person events, things like that, where you're just not going to trust, like if you and I were doing a deal and you're like, I agree with your terms, but you don't know.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, I need you to wire me money for this deal. I may want to shake your hand first, right?
I think it's important. I mean, even with my wealth management clients, a lot of them, you know, a lot of them are retired. They don't want to get in a car and drive or whatever. But we have in the past met, and you know, we will in the future. Usually once a year, we just meet just to, you know, press the flesh and have a conversation in person. At that point. And I agree with you. I think, I don't think it's ever going to be 100% virtual, but I think we're getting to the point where you can pretty much have that virtual relationship with people. And, you know, if you put some things in place that make it a little less risky for somebody, you know, not wire me money, but hey, I'm going to send you an invoice and you could, you know, you can pay it with your credit card or whatever. Okay. Then there's some protection there.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, like I said, we're just scratching the surface.
Absolutely. Well, let's switch gears and talk about the Fast Five questions.
Sounds good.
All right. So first question, you wake up in the morning, business is totally gone. You have $500 in your pocket, a laptop computer, place to live. What are you going to do first?
I think the first thing I would do is probably scream and be like, what the heck happened? I would probably go for a run and just kind of think about my options.
Yeah.
Because if I assume that your question means that I have a place to live that it's paid for, so I don't have a lot of expenses, that gives you optionality because you have a house to live in, and you've got $500, which essentially means you can probably, you know, eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for quite a while, right? And so I think on that run,
you get food too. So
Okay, so I've got all that stuff. Yeah. So I think what I would try to think about is not necessarily going back into a W-2 environment.
Okay.
I would probably just think about who do I know in my network where we could, because I've got the ability of time now, right? I don't have a business to worry about. I don't have the expenses of the business. All I've got to do is figure out what I do next. I think it's think about who my network is and then see if there's any really interesting creative things that we could do together where I can bring my knowledge of building a business. I've got a ton of obviously recruiting experience. And see if there's anything interesting that we could create versus just going back in and starting another recruiting business or, you know, going and getting a W-2 job. I would try to at least give myself the grace to think about other options than just going back to safe, quote unquote, safe options, essentially.
Love it. Second question, what's your biggest business mistake?
Well, starting a business in January 2020, right before COVID, was probably the biggest, but... that was an unavoidable and unknowable
none of us knew that
mistake. I guess it's kind of similar. It's honestly Hire Tomorrow related, but part of the other reason why I quit my W-2 job in 2020 was to have the time to build recruiting business, but also focus on some real estate investing that my wife and I were looking at and interested in. And we hindsight is obviously 2020. Mm-hmm. So we started investing in multifamily real estate in 2021.
Okay.
And, you know, if you think back to 2021, property values were going through the roof, interest rates were super low, everybody and their brother was getting into real estate in one form or fashion. And we did not heed the advice of Warren Buffett, and I'm not going to say it correctly probably, but, you know, be cautious when everybody's greedy and greedy when everybody's cautious. Mm. And we were being greedy right alongside everybody else. And it's just a unfortunate thing where we invested a decent amount of money and we likely will not be getting most of it back.
Okay.
And so that was probably the biggest lesson. And maybe it's more of a life lesson as to if things seem really too good to be true,
if
everybody's doing the same thing, you probably want to just take a beat and be like, should we be doing this? Regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, if everybody's jumping off the bridge, are you going to do it just because everybody's doing it? And that's kind of what, if you got hindsight, that's probably what it felt like for us.
Yeah.
Everybody was, we drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And I think everybody that's invested in real estate's got to have their one, you know, issue that, you know, one frenzy that gets you into trouble on the good or the bad side. You know, it's, you've got to have, to learn that lesson and to learn risk management more than anything. I mean, it's the same thing in trading stocks or options or anything like that. You've got to have those times where you just get smacked to realize, okay, this is how I manage risk going forward.
Right.
So
you
learn.
100%.
Yeah. Live and learn. Yeah. What's a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
So I've got Who Not How by Dan Sullivan.
Yep.
If you haven't heard about it or read it, it is all about a lot of entrepreneurs think about if they want to grow their business, they typically think about how can I, as an entrepreneur, work harder, work longer hours, do more, right? They always think about how can I, and this book really talks about, instead of thinking, how can I do something? Who can I hire? Who can I partner with? Who can I bring in? What technology can I bring in to effectively replace tasks that I'm doing as an entrepreneur that are below my kind of hourly rate, right? And so, you know, hiring a virtual assistant for me was one of the best decisions that I've made because they have taken a lot of the blocking and tackling stuff that I do or did and allows me to, as the business owner, to focus on things that generate revenue, not responding to every email in 10 seconds, not, you know, coordinating interviews, you know, all that stuff where, you know, it's a, you know, kind of $15-$20 an hour task outsourced, and I can focus on things that are like getting clients, finding candidates, and delivering and driving revenue.
Yeah, what Mike Michalowicz calls protecting your queen bee role. You know, what's the queen bee role in the hive? Yeah, you need to protect that at all costs. So yeah, totally agree. What's a tool that you use in your business every day that you might recommend for the audience?
So I guess I need to think of another one, because this one I can't really recommend because it's a proprietary tool to a thing that I'm a coaching group that I'm in. But I have I'll think of something else. But I think a tool that I use, because I have a virtual assistant, but also I have a marketing consultant. I've just created a very simple tracker. And if anybody's heard of EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, I stole some of their tools that I've modified to essentially create a accountability chart for me, but also keeping everybody in task. Because a lot of meetings that I've had, both in corporate America and in my own business that I've run, that seem to just kind of go off task. You kind of just catch up, you kind of just talk, and then you wait for the last 10 minutes, and then you kind of actually say, did you do what you're supposed to do, and all that fun stuff. And so one thing that I use and keep up to date is keeping this kind of task tracker, but also keeping the bigger projects, the bigger goals in mind, and helping us drive to that, which has helped us, you know, execute on things faster, allowing us to do more creative things in the long term. So I say, and this could be, you know, somebody can create it themselves, but essentially having just that kind of accountability and project tracker that, and a formula for how we run meetings, as opposed to just waiting for everybody to join and saying, hey, how's everybody doing? And you kind of just wing it. We have a very formulaic way, and we get everything accomplished. We still have, it doesn't feel robotic, and it's been a pretty big game changer, I think.
Fantastic.
For a
Love it.
Perspective.
I've got to read Gino's book again. It's been a while since I've read it.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things that, you know, as my life and businesses get a little bit more complicated, and will, it's probably a good time to reread. So thanks for the prompt there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last question for you. What's your definition of freedom?
So my wife and I kind of have our goals of, and I call, there's three layers of freedom that how I define them.
Okay.
And everybody can define them differently. First layer of freedom is having enough kind of passive income to offset your day-to-day life expenses, your rent, your mortgage, you know, your food. You know, you're not going on vacations, but if you both lost your job, you could still stay in the house that you're living in. You'd have to, you know, adjust your life. But that's kind of level one.
We refer to that as minimum required income, MRI.
There you go. Yep. Level two is kind of you kind of have your current lifestyle covered. So you've got all of your basic expenses, but you can still go on two vacations a year. You can still, you know, golf and go to dinners and all that fun stuff. And then I've got level two, which I won't say the official name for it that I have, but essentially it's FU money.
Yep.
And that is you're free to do whatever you want with whomever you want, wherever you want.
Yep.
So we're kind of teetering on level two at the moment. We're kind of between level one and level two. You know, the freedom that it provides you from a mental perspective, I think, is not something that I was prepared for. Mm. When you start to think about, like, if shit hit the fan, pardon my French, you know, you aren't going to go, you know, poor. You're not going to be homeless. You know, you have the ability to, you know, still pay your bills and keep the lights on. And I know some people that are in that level three that just have that wealth that you can wake up in the morning and you can create the day that you want every day. And that sounds amazing. And that's what we're driving towards. And, you know, we've got plans to be there as fast as we possibly can without sacrificing, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, in the moment.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because in the Freedom Day method, which is what I created, and, you know, the audience has heard it me yammer on this multiple times over the years. I mean, Freedom Day, my definition of Freedom Day is 125% of your MRI. So if 125% of your MRI is covered by passive income or income coming in that you don't really have to work hard for, then you are free. You've reached your Freedom Day. May not feel like it. I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, mine is well covered by the sale of my business and everything else, but I still work probably harder than I did before. But it's because now I'm going, okay, now I've got this and this and this that I want to add. And I keep adding more layers of income coming in so that it just takes less and less risk away from the overall situation. But
well, I was just going to say, you can take more risk to the outside world because you have that safety net, right?
You're like, no,
hey,
you're good.
If I'm willing to invest 100, 200,000, whatever the number is, because I know that even if that goes to zero, I've got all this other stuff over here.
Absolutely.
I saw this probably an Instagram reel. And it was this, I can't remember who it was, but essentially he was saying like the first million was yeah. hard, but now he's probably got businesses to do like $20 million a year. And he's like, I could go make $10 million tomorrow. Yeah. Like, you know, and so it's just that interesting. Once you hit a certain threshold, you know, what seemed impossible is just like a Tuesday.
Well, is it the old,
right?
And yeah, so the old just, Charlie Munger. Yeah. The Charlie Munger thing, you know, hey, the first million's hard. The rest of them are easy after that.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's work hard to get yourself to that point. And I think he even at one point said $100,000, you know, get your business to $100,000. It's once you get past that, then it gets easier. And then, yep. you know, you kind of double on top of that and keep growing. I mean, it feels good that day that you wake up and you're like, okay, if I didn't want to go to work today, I didn't have to. I do it because I want to and I enjoy it, but I don't have to.
Yeah. And you're not doing things Right. And you're not taking on clients you don't want to take on. You're not taking on too much work. You're doing the things that you want to do. You're doing a podcast that you probably really enjoy doing.
Yep. Don't make a dime doing
and
it.
And
it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's yours. You can do it or not do it. Yeah. And, you know, people would probably be upset because you've done a ton of these, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, but you can choose to do what you need to do. And that's kind of what everybody's chasing.
Life is beautiful.
Most part.
Life's beautiful. Well, Justin, thank you for being on. If somebody's interested in learning a little bit more about you, connecting with you, maybe need some help on the recruiting side, where's the best place to find you?
I'm all over LinkedIn. You okay. can definitely see, you know, LinkedIn is probably the best way to connect with me. My website's just hiretomorrow.com and my email is just jdixon@hiretomorrow.com. So, but LinkedIn is probably the easiest. You'll definitely see a bunch of posts on there pretty much daily.
Brilliant.
So.
Well, I'll make sure we're connected too, because I'm not sure if we are. So,
yeah, well, we'll be connected on LinkedIn and in person
very soon. This will be awesome. Well, yeah. Justin, thank you for being on the show, man. It was a great show. And really loved learning a little bit about your business and everything else and on your continual journey to making this thing grow bigger.
Thank you. It was a great time.
Awesome.
Appreciate
it. Folks, make sure that you subscribe to the channel wherever you're listening or watching. And make sure that you are right back here next week for the next show. So thanks a lot, and we will see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.